is tomorrow is known to sleep.
Hello, my name is Tristan Nieslein, and you're listening to Tomorrow's Motorsport, the podcast looking at the future of innovation, transformation, and performance in the motorsport industry. I'm joined, as ever, by Nick Butcher from Ignition Human Performance. Nick, how are you today?
I'm very well, and I'm really excited about this podcast that we have with Charlie Martin. Well, Ignition have been working with Charlie as the official business performance partner of MB Motorsport, which she is the development driver for. And so I'm really excited to hear what she's got to say. She's got a great backstory, and I think listeners will be really excited to hear how she's looking at tomorrow's motorsport.
Yeah, absolutely. As you mentioned, Charlie Martin is an undoubted change maker in the motorsport industry. Not only is she an incredibly quick endurance racing driver, she's also a Racing Pride and Stonewall ambassador for organisations committed to LGBTQ plus equality, looking at racing and all aspects of life. Charlie's an inspiration to so many. We'll hear some of those stories actually in the conversation that follows. We joined Charlie the week after her maiden win in the Super Trofeo Series at Road America. And as she sits currently second in the overall championship, it was a really great time to catch up with her.
This is tomorrow's motorsport.
Charlie, thank you so much for joining us. How are you today?
I'm really good, thank you. Yeah, I'm good. I'm loving this amazing heat wave that we're experiencing, or otherwise known as summer. And so I've just come from the gym, and I'm having a great time this week.
From the gym, fantastic. Well, perfection never stops, does it? So that's good. And of course, you're in the middle of a busy racing season. We join you the week after winning in Super Trofeo at Road America. And that was your first win of the season, right? So massive congratulations. How does it feel?
Thank you. Yeah, it's really a big high after this weekend, because we've been chasing that win. We knew we could do it. And we also got second place in this race two on Sunday. It was an amazing feeling. I won't lie. It's always been something I wanted to do, racing in America, and just standing on the top step of the podium on Saturday made everything worth it, really, because it's been a lot of traveling, a lot of work gone into this season, and like I said, coming from the gym, because it's over in America, it just seems to be boiling hot at every race and quite often very humid, so it's a big challenge physically racing in the car, in terms of I'm not used to racing somewhere that's that hot all the time, and really, really good vibes right now, and a lot of momentum going into VIR at the end of the month.
Fantastic. And that put you into, is it, am I right in saying you're second in the championship at the moment as well as a result of those races?
That's correct, yes. Yeah, I'm not sure the exact point difference, because we had it down at 3 points to the lead, but our nearest competitor actually corrected us on Instagram in a comment yesterday. But either way, we're within a stone's throw of the lead. So we've got two races at VIR, then we've got I think three more races at Portimao, and then we've got the World Finals at Portimao as well. So still plenty of racing to come.
Yeah, and showing championship form as well. So, really great luck with that. We're really excited to have you on. You're a brilliant example of what we're looking at on this podcast in terms of innovation, transformation and performance. Your career has been really an amazing journey. Would you mind just giving us a bit of background that brought you to this point?
Thanks, Tristan. Yeah, I mean, I appreciate you saying that. It's been a bit of a roller coaster, really. I mean, I don't come from a racing family or anything like that at all. Started racing, hill climbing when I was 23 years old, or 24, in fact, 23, a year I finished university, having experienced hill climb and various forms of club racing through one of my friend's dads growing up, bought myself a little Peugeot. Spent a year putting it back together, learned on the job, started hill climbing it, and very much felt like that was probably my station in motorsport. I didn't really have any big aspirations of going any further than that. I guess it gradually became less of a hobby and more of a way of life. And I started to, like any driver, go out there, try to market myself, try to get sponsorship. And it's brought me to a point where now I'm racing professionally. I've raced in some pretty big series, driven a variety of cars from single seaters to prototypes to GT cars. And yeah, trying to make history as the first trans driver at Le Mans, because I transitioned midway through my career. Back, gosh, when will it be now? Well, it's 10 years this year, actually, since I started transition. So that in itself has been a really challenging process to go through, as well as the fact that just there was no one I could see, no role models, no one like me in my sport.
Yeah.
And when you're trying to make it in motorsport as any driver, without any money, without any family backing, without anyone telling you like how to do it or what you should or shouldn't be doing, it's hard enough without basically segregating yourself from 99.9% of people by waving your hand in the air and saying, oh, by the way, everyone, I'm transgender. And so it's not been easy, but it's been quite a journey.
Yeah, and you talk about your ambitions for Le Mans 24 and wanting to become the first transgender driver to take part in that. How's that going? What are the challenges that you're currently facing in order to move into that seat for Le Mans?
Well, the main challenges, I suppose, are having the financial backing, the commercial partnerships that enable that to happen, and part of that is then also getting the results on track, being in series where I can, like I'm doing this year, you know, be racing in endurance in a GT car that I can prove my ability as a driver. So I'd say the last 2 years and then into this year as well have certainly been going really, really well. 2020, I raced BMW at the Nordschleife. I did the full season there as well as the 24-hour race. Went really well. You know, we got fourth place in our class in the Nürburgring 24 hours. Last year, raced a BMW again in ADAC GT4 a little, and the Praga and Brit car will be finished third in class. And this year in the Lamborghini in Super Trofeo North America. So currently second in class after coming away from last weekend with a race win and a second place as well. So part of that is like, you know, demonstrating that as driver, yeah, you know, you're a safe set of hands, you've got the speed, you've got consistency, the reliability. So I'd say that side of it's going very well. And then really it's just, yeah, getting the people that can help get behind the opportunities that open up as any drivers out there trying to get into higher series, trying to get into, for me, GT3, which is the category that I'm aiming for. So I'd say it's going pretty well. I mean, you know, there's a lot of momentum right now, both on and off track. A lot of really cool things happening. I was in Vogue magazine. In fact, this month I'm in Vogue magazine.
That's the second time, isn't it? You've been in Vogue?
It is. Yeah, it is. And then also, well, kind of the third time, actually. But I was in the Vogue 25 last year, which was slightly surreal.
How have you found that sort of transition? You know, you talked around literally being the only transgender driver, sort of 10 or starting the transition 10 years ago. How have you found that suddenly you've gone from sort of there probably feeling, as you say, there's no role models, anything like that, but almost becoming that role model and suddenly being in Vogue magazine? Sort of talk us through that.
A bit of a dream, if I'm honest, because that's all it could ever be for me 10 years ago and prior to that, prior to even transitioning, because as you rightly say, there was never anyone I could look up to, no role models in motorsport, in any careers that I was interested in doing. And a big part of that, therefore, is basically make it up as you go, because you have to go out there and really carve your own path. And when you don't even know what that looks like, it's difficult, because, you know, just say, for example, partnerships, sponsorship, all the kind of traditional companies in motorsport all probably are working with men, maybe some with women, but in terms of the LGBTQ plus space, there's no one to look to and think, oh, well, this company are doing something with this driver, so therefore, you know, I might be worth trying to reach out to them. It's really been a kind of leap of faith, and yeah, I do feel immensely proud and of what I've achieved in terms of getting to that point. But it has been really hard, and I think a lot of the time I felt like, surely there have got to be companies out there that are doing, you know, really amazing work in terms of like tangible activations and campaigns and things that support the LGBTQ plus community. So surely me doing what I'm doing, being in such a niche within motorsport, that support would be easier to access than it's been. I think now, thankfully, I feel like my profile and my platform has reached a level whereby, yeah, it does feel like it's getting easier. And certainly, you know, being in Vogue magazine, working with BMW as a friend of the brand, things like that help to, I think, validate you within that space. When you start working with big, recognized global brands, it does give you more kind of credibility, which is important. But when I started, it was very much like, right, okay, you know, trying to reach out to Stonewall and Athlete Ally and Mermaids and really trying to think, right, I want to do advocacy in this space. What does that look like? How do I start? You know, right, let's reach out to some charities and just take them as baby steps, and it kind of grows from there, really.
In hindsight, do you think almost having that blank page where you could go off in it, do you think that helped, or do you think it hindered?
I think maybe a little of both. I mean, in terms of it helping, it's like, for example, 2018, I was racing at Silverstone in June. It was in Ginetta GT5. It was a big race of the season, headlining with the British GT Championship. And I basically got asked all the drivers and all the championships to run these little pride stickers on their cars. Spoke to all the drivers at briefing in the morning. No one had done anything like that. So I think while it's a bit like, is this going to work? You think, well, at least I'll give it a go because no one's done it and failed. So let's just see what happens. It turned out to be a big success. And I think things like that, it does give you the freedom to just come up with an idea, which, to be honest, I came up with that idea on the Tuesday before the race weekend. So sometimes you have that flexibility to just run with an idea, but also it does make it difficult because there isn't that element of failing and falling flat on your face at times, which is something I think anyone has to face when you're trying to be a bit of a trailblazer. But sometimes you're going to try to make things happen, and with the best will in the world, you're not always going to succeed, but you've just got to, you've got to be prepared to fail, I think, if you want to succeed.
One of the things that just to pick up on is your responsibilities as being the first through the gate, let's say, and being that one that people can look up to. Your responsibility is beyond your back garden in that respect, and you must have felt quite alone in, as you mentioned, Stonewall and Racing Pride coming in. Do you feel like you're gradually being joined by more and more people in motorsport in supporting the LGBTQ plus community and bringing more power to that advocacy?
Yeah, I do. I think that's really true to say. And I mean, certainly not just in terms of people from the community, but in terms of allies as well, which is, you know, allyship, as we all know, is so important, because it can't always be the community itself that's doing all the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
And so I think, like you say, since the formation of Racing Pride in 2019, we've seen one of the nice things about that is that it's pulled together people from all different areas within the sport who have been able to use their own visibility, their own profile, to just create more acceptance, more awareness, whether that's, you know, Matt Bishop, who's currently, you know, head of PR and comms at Aston Martin Formula One, whether that's someone like myself or Abby Eaton or Richard Morris, you know, as people who are drivers and people, you know, marshals, people working in media roles, you know, whatever it is. It's really, I think, just to, like you say, just to know that you're not alone, to see other people out there and to share our own experiences, to be going into companies, doing talks, trying to gradually create change from the inside out. It's part of a process. It's something that can't all just change overnight. But I think seeing that and that awareness that it creates, that acceptance that it creates within the paddock, within the industry, it just makes it feel more, it just makes it feel easier to be you in that space. It creates more of a supportive environment. It's a cliche, you can't be what you can't see. And I think visibility is really critical for that, because when you don't have any visibility, you have no way of knowing what you're walking into. You have no way of knowing if that's the environment, if the paddock, if an event you're going to, if that is going to be supportive. And so I think just seeing that gradually happen more and more through osmosis, it does create a real shift.
Absolutely. And one of the things I know from other work that's going on around diversity and inclusion, let's again just stay in motorsport, which is really about bringing a different set of experiences to the industry as well, bringing different ways of thinking, different backgrounds, which can only benefit the industry as a whole. Is there anywhere where you would say that you can point out really specifically where you've seen some great successes through organizations like Rape and Pride being involved in motorsport? Are there points in time or particular things that you can say, actually, that was a shift, that was a change that I can identify of increasing inclusivity and increasing a feeling of belonging?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things I can put my finger on, certainly. When you look at, say, let's start at the top. Look at Formula One this year. We've seen quite a few of the teams really actively trying to support the LGBTQ+ community during Pride. And not just during Pride Month, you know, ongoing things that we've seen, people running. And again, it's not just about running a Pride sticker on the car, which a lot of the teams have done, but ongoing work that, say, like, you know, look at Sebastian Vettel. I think he's become an amazing ally to the community, and just things that he does, things that he says. Lewis Hamilton, again, both of those drivers really, I think, creating an impact that feels very genuine. It feels like it comes from them, not just from someone whispering in their ear, telling them that this is the thing they should be doing this month. And I think that does inevitably have a huge impact on it, and it all filters down all the way through to grassroots eventually. Another thing I've seen this year, actually, racing in America, someone I met at the weekend, in fact, who works for ZF, obviously massive global automotive company, and they came up to me and basically were like, you know, thank you so much for transitioning and making your videos on YouTube, because seeing your videos and most importantly seeing how people have reacted to you within the motorsport and automotive industry and the support that you've had was really the catalyst for me feeling like I could transition not only my personal life but in my career, and knowing that I would be okay. And you know, 3 years down the line, they're actually now doing work within ZF to use their platform and their profile to create acceptance and awareness within the company and so on and so on. And I just thought, yeah, actually, that's what it's all about, really. I mean, okay, like people who aren't from the community, but also just, you know, using your platform to empower other people to feel like, actually, yeah, you know, you can be yourself in this industry. And I think that's the that's the real power and visibility.
That's incredible. And if you take that one example and think about through being in Vogue, as you mentioned, and the exposure that you get through what you've shared of your own journey, that must have happened hundreds and thousands of times. And I'm sure if you ever stop to think about that kind of impact, you can feel really, really proud about that visibility again that you've created around it, and what impact that will have had on people's lives. It must be incredibly powerful.
Thank you. Yeah, it's really, I got quite choked up when they were telling me this, because to think, not in a big ego way, but just to think that, yeah, through sharing something, you've enabled someone to change their life in a way that they found their inner happiness. So they're now feel like 100% the person they were born to be. And I know what difference that's made to me. So to be able to help someone else have that is a really amazing feeling. And as you say, the more people you can reach, for me, that's one of the things that motivates me, is just trying to do more and more work and reach more people, so that not only helping people find that themselves, but then helping other people like allies understand that process in a way that other people think then, well, why wouldn't I want everyone to have that same lived experience? And as an ally, how can I help facilitate that in the company that I work in my organization, in my sport, in my social circle, whatever. It's making people feel like, yeah, do you know what? I can help other people by doing this, and actually empowering people like with a call to action that they come away like, oh wow, yeah, that's like one or two or three or four things I could do that would be really, really helpful to someone in that situation.
You're obviously seeing this now from a global scale, because you're racing in America. Are there differences? Are some things that are happening in the UK better than what's happening in America, or indeed vice versa? Are there things in the UK that we can learn from America?
Good question. I mean, I'm not so clued up on things that are happening in America, I suppose. I know what Motorsport UK is doing, because through the work I've done with Racing Pride, I know that they have the Equality, Diversity and Inclusion Committee, of which there are various subcommittees, and I'm on the subcommittee for LGBTQ plus inclusion. So through that, I can see, I've had a direct window into seeing and understanding what's happening, which is really impressive. It's all being done with a very robust approach. And I think that is driving a lot of positive change, which we'll see manifesting itself more and more throughout the industry, not just in terms of LGBTQ plus inclusion, but also there's a BAME subcommittee, a subcommittee for disability and access, which I know Natalie McGloin is doing fantastic work with them, as she does with the FIA. So there's a... That's one side of it, I guess. In terms of America, it's funny. I mean, just this weekend, I reached out to somebody at IMSA, because I know they have this year set up a kind of diversity academy for people from underrepresented groups to support drivers who perhaps come from a group that's unrepresented, sort of disadvantaged, and people who are trying to use their profile to represent those groups and drive change forwards. So I'm just trying to look into that, really. I've seen a few things happening in America in terms of, I think, like, there was a really good campaign in NASCAR with Busch Light, who were putting a huge amount of, like, millions of dollars into progressing the careers of women in NASCAR, which I thought was really cool, because these are women who are already racing in the category they want to be in, and it's like saying, right, okay, how do we get them right to the top level of NASCAR and get them at the front of the field. So I think that was a really, really compelling example of support. But I mean, yeah, I'm trying to find my feet over there. I mean, going and racing in a whole different continent, it's, although we share a language with America, it's culturally a quite a different country, I think, even just from, you know, East Coast to Middle America to West Coast. So it is interesting understanding the different lay of the land over there and the way things work. And again, you know, you turn up at a race weekend and I'm very focused on racing. It's only now I've just started to have a bit more time to try and network in the paddock and try to understand what exactly what I can do in terms of using my own platform over there. Part of me's felt a little bit apprehensive, I've got to say, because there is some pretty rough things happening in America right now in terms of the trans community, in terms of all kinds of things, you know, like we've seen in Florida, the Don't Say Gay bill, some of the southern states where there's a lot of legislation being put through, which is really like going completely backwards in terms of trans rights. And it doesn't fill you with confidence, even knowing the confidence that I've built over the last 10 years. It still makes me feel a bit apprehensive about going out there and, say, standing on a podium and waving a trans flag. I don't know that I'd really have the confidence to do that in America, because, you know, some of the states we're racing in, it does feel like that would be frowned upon.
It's a bit like starting all over, right? Maybe the same kind of feeling. I guess it would be the case, but would you feel like you're getting enough support out there if you wanted to do that?
Yeah, I don't know, Tris, to be honest, is the honest answer, because I think until I try doing something like that, I won't know. It is like, takes me back to stage one in some ways, where it's a bit of a leap of faith. And I think that there undoubtedly would be people that would be supportive, and I think IMSA as an organization would be supportive. I don't doubt that at all. But then at the first race of the season in Laguna Seca, we had a podium, and one of my teammates said, when we were up on the podium, two guys stood behind him, were standing there saying all kinds of horrible stuff about me being trans. So I'd only just really arrived in the championship at that point in time, and already there are some people who know I'm trans who see that as a very negative thing. And you know, it was quite a heartwarming story, because the guy who told me this, one of the other drivers in the team, I'd only met him a handful of times at that point, and he turned around and gave him a piece of his mind. And he told me this story a few weeks later when we shared a car to drive down to another one of the races. I thought that was an amazing bit of, you know, allyship from him, that he stood up for me in that way. But equally, I was like, wow, you know, I've only been here 5 minutes, and some people already have quite polarized opinions about me being a trans woman in the paddock. So I don't know. I always want to use my profile. I want to try and do what I can, but equally, I'm there to race and do well, and that's my priority. And I don't want to undo my, you know, do anything that really compromises my focus during a race weekend. So it's a difficult line to tread sometimes.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can only imagine.
And I hate that feeling as well, because my integrity is very important to me. And I don't like feeling as though I can't do something that I would feel is or say is the right thing to do. But equally, I do. I mean, I'm lucky. I think the team that I race with are very, you know, Dream Racing, fantastic. My teammate, Jason Keats, you know, CEO of Awesome, they're doing, both him as an individual and the things they're doing as a company, are incredibly supportive, not just of trans rights, but of, you know, of all kind of minority backgrounds. And so I feel like I have very good support network around me there. But it's just when you go outside of that, it's the great unknown a little bit. I don't know.
It's interesting, because as you rightly say, Charlie, we are two very different cultures, albeit we speak the same language. So, you know, it'll be very interesting to see and probably reflect in a few years' time sort of where the sport has gone, both from a UK side and a US side, and see where they're at and see what's doing and see how you know, sort of outside influences influence that and all the rest of it. But I certainly think that, you know, what you're doing and going over there, and ultimately it is about being seen. And until people see that, they're not going to know. So you're doing a great job on that side. Right. And I suppose that kind of leads us to where do you see diversity and inclusion, and maybe that's from a broader perspective as well, where do you see that going in the sport moving forward?
I see it becoming a more integral part of the sport in terms of who are we as a sport and what do we stand for. When I think back to, say, 2018, when I went to the Stonewall Summit at Wembley, which was the first time I'd ever gone on stage and spoken about my lived experience and so on and so on. And you know, one thing I remember quite profoundly at that point in time was that all the governing bodies of UK sport were there, apart from the obvious one for me, which was anyone from Motorsport UK. Since then, you know, motorsport has, I think, started to really embrace this discussion around inclusion, and which is fantastic to see. And I think where I look at other sports, I guess my point I'm making is that where I look at where other sports are now, football or rugby or I don't know, pick one, but the point being that they're perhaps a little bit further down the line. And I suppose that's where I'm hoping that motorsport will be. You know, this isn't just a thing where it's like, great, you know, we've done X, Y, and Z, we've ticked a few boxes. It's much more about an ongoing process, which never really ends. It's just part of how do we evolve? How do we retain people in the sport, whether that's fans, whether that's people working in roles within the sport and industry. You know, you look at statistics like, I think 36% of 18 to 24 year olds in the UK don't identify as straight. And that in itself tells you that the fans, the engineers, the people coming into the sport in the future need to see that sport is evolving and modernizing like any career, like any industry that they might want to go and work in. And so I think that's something that has to continually, yeah, to evolve, basically. And I think, again, looking at other sports, perhaps like we have the, you know, the Rainbow Laces campaign, you look at how successful that is every year. It's a massive activation that happens across a multitude of sports in November. Everybody wearing their rainbow laces, not just to go and play sport, but to go to work in. We have stadiums all around the UK, like football stadiums, which have, you know, pride flags. And I remember last year it was like big pride kind of doormats, but huge ones. So anyone walking into that football stadium, that rugby pitch, whatever, is like, that's a palpable thing that, okay, we as a sport, we don't tolerate discrimination against the LGBTQ plus community. And I think seeing motorsport take up, whether it's becoming part of that activation, obviously in November, there's not really much motorsport happening because it's the end of the season. But I think motorsport starting to tap into wider social sort of activations, campaigns, things like that, which really, as opposed to, say, what we have now, which is a little bit fragmented in terms of individual teams, like in Formula One, you know, individual teams doing things and doing their own thing. I think things that actually unite everyone through an activation that comes from the top down, from the governing body, I think things like that happening more frequently will really help sort of set the tone in terms of the, you know, the wider sense of inclusion.
Brilliant. And that's where individuals like yourself and also organizations like Racing Pride to help organize, I guess, a little bit that fragmented approach and make it strategic, make it part of the strategic delivery of series from the governing body, from the rights holders, is really super important. I will ask you, but I think I'm starting to see that direction of travel. Are you starting to see that is becoming more organized?
Yeah, I do. And I think that's a really positive thing. I think, again, you know, I speak about Motorsport UK because I suppose that's my, that's where I've had, a seat at the table in terms of the subcommittee and what's happening. And I think Motorsport UK is doing a really, you know, really proper job, again, through the guidance of Racing Pride and you know, working with a very structured framework of, right, okay, let's get everything right internally in terms of processes, workshops, training, policies, and so on. And then once we've done that, then it's like looking externally. And I think for a lot of companies, sometimes that can be the stumbling block because it's like, right, we want to go out and we want to do all this, but then companies sometimes feel like, well, we can't do that yet because if someone calls us out, you know, then we trip up because it's like, well, what are we doing internally? So I think Motorsport UK is, you know, doing everything the right way. It's really amazing to see, and I think that that's probably the next stage of you know, starting to have those, like as you say, this kind of strategic approach, which is, you know, what is there at the moment, but then looking outside the sport and how does that look going forwards, and how do we bring everybody together through activations like that. So it's really yeah, it's really positive to see. And I think certainly in terms of UK motorsport, it gives me a lot of optimism about the future. And just to think, yeah, you know, this is where we were 2018. When I came out, it was really scary. I thought, you know, it's hard enough trying to make a career as it is. I wanted to come out in the sport because I felt like there was a lot of good that could come from that. But I honestly didn't know what that was going to mean for my career, if that was going to be the end of me as a racing driver. And I think somebody coming out now, we're only 4 years down the line, I think it's a very different set of circumstances for somebody. We're not there yet, perfectly, but it's definitely a lot better than it was. And I think that's a really positive thing to see in a 3 to 4 year period.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. Where can people find out more about you, Charlie? Follow what you're doing, follow all of your amazing success that you're having, the results of the championship, and also what you're going to be doing next.
If you want to find me, all you got to do is Google Go Charlie. That's my my kind of moniker, I suppose. Or go at Go Charlie M on Twitter or Instagram. But yeah, if you just put in Go Charlie, you'll find my website and everything related to me, really. As I say, racing in the Lamborghini Super Trofeo North America. So you can find all the results on IMSA. You can watch along on all the races as they're broadcast live. And yeah, just anything else that's happening. I'm just trying to think what's coming up in the next few months, really. We're heading into the last race of the season in America. We go to Portimao for the finals in November, so it's you know, we're having a great year so far, touch wood. And if anyone wants to watch along or support or go follow me, then you know where to find me.
And of course, closer to home, you're also working with MB Motorsports in British touring cars. How's that going?
Yeah, it's basically to have the role as the official development driver for Rocket MB Motorsport, and especially because you know, I've done so much work with BMW over the last few years as well. So the next thing coming up with that is an actual test in the 330e M Sport that Jake Hill's doing very well in this year. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. It's been fantastic to have that role as well, and it's been quite challenging with all the travel backwards and forwards to America, but I'm looking forward to closing up the season and supporting at some of the rounds as well. Going to be there, I think. Next few ones I'm going to be visiting are Silverstone and then Brands Hatch for the final round of the season. So it's amazing, really. I mean, I say I've really, really loved working with BMW, and I think I think, yeah, I always wanted to get behind the wheel of a British touring car as well. So to bring those two things together, I'm very, very excited. And I think Jake's obviously proven the car is incredibly effective this season. So yeah, it'd be great to try see what the new hybrid cars are like as well.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Charlie. I think today you gave some really considered and compellingly positive views on the future of motorsport, and also, you know, the reality of the journey, which has been, I think we said before, both inspiring and impactful for other people. And thank you again for sharing that today. Hopefully it will do the same again. So from my point of view, always great to speak to you, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
This is Tomorrow's Motorsport.